Welcome back to In the Moment. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota's male voters rejected women's suffrage proposals in five elections between 1889 and 1918. But local and national suffrage activists kept the issue alive, managed to get another measure on the 1918 ballot. This time was different. Molly Rosen is an associate professor of history at the University of South Dakota, and she joins us on the phone today. Molly, welcome back. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Lori. Glad to be here.
This has been such a great summer learning about these things. And one of the eye-openers for me, I think I've said it more than once, but it bears repeating, is I think I had this idea that, you know, suffrage was inevitable. And then you look back at what some of these women went through, how they suffered to just even be heard. It sort of has reinvigorated my thoughts about history and the vote in South Dakota and in America. Do you sort of have that same experience with, as much as you know and as much as you study this, that every once in a while you sit back and you go, wow, that was pretty courageous?
I do. And well, I think it says a lot about South Dakota too. And yeah, these women who just kept coming back time after time. I mean, some of them were involved, you know, through all of the statehood campaigns and even before in the territorial period. I mean, they have a lot of stamina and a lot of belief. But it's really interesting to me, too, because suffrage, it meant that all the debates surrounding it, despite the fact that it lost, it meant that people were talking about women's suffrage throughout all of the first 50 years of South Dakota political culture. So it says something about the culture. But yes, these women just kept going and going and going until 1918, and they, you know, finally were able to push it through to a victory, a sizable victory.
Let's talk about some of the political maneuvering at that point, because as 50 years of people talking about it, there's also 50 years of opposition, really, and people speaking out against it. So what was happening in that final push, kind of lay the groundwork for us here?
Yeah. I mean, a couple of things were happening. Of course, one of the major contexts was the Great War. World War I was on. And so this was also, women were great volunteers, and they were working for the Red Cross, and they were raising money for the Liberty Loan campaign. They were very active. So there's the war context. Also, that war context is affecting the national movement. And so suffragists are really making a push to get the 19th Amendment through. At the same time, South Dakota is trying to finally find success on in 1918 on the state level amendment. And that context really affected how in the end suffragists won their battle, so to speak, on Amendment E. And what happened was they, of course, went right back after the 1916 loss and went to the state legislature and managed to get it through the state legislature so that it would appear on the ballot in 1918. Well, then the war context means that Governor Norbeck decides to hold a special session, which he does. And in that session, that original referendum gets changed. A clause gets added to it. It not only will grant women the vote, it will take away vote from non-citizen immigrant voters. Now, in order to understand that, you need to know that up until that time, South Dakota had been one of six states that allowed non-citizen immigrants to vote in their elections. Now, they had to have declared their intent officially with paperwork to become a citizen, but they did not yet have to become a fully naturalized citizen. So what this bill did, and it became, at the end of this, after the combination of these two issues, it became what was called Amendment E, our citizenship amendment. And in some ways, the whole nation was moving towards this idea of linking voting rights to citizenship, not property, not race, not gender, right? So in some ways, it's a part of that trajectory. But for a state who had always welcomed all these immigrants, it was definitely, you know, in part inspired by fears stoked by our enemies in World War I. South Dakota has a lot of German population, a lot of German Russians, and suffragists had long held our immigrant population responsible for voting against suffrage, for defeating some of those earlier measures. So it combined the two, and that helped push the suffragists over the line. Because, for example, there's a lot of kind of hysteria and a lot of, you know, very bold and public anti-immigrant sentiment, anti-German sentiment. And what this did was, you could not vote against woman suffrage. Let's say you did not support suffrage. You could not vote against woman suffrage without voting for maintaining non-citizen immigrant voting rights. So it kind of cut off the opposition that the suffragists were facing. And suffragists responded, too. I mean, the best of them said, you know, we know a lot of the immigrants in the state are wonderful citizens and wonderful community members, but you can go ahead and finish your paperwork and then vote, right? If you're for us, that's what you will do, and you will vote.
Yeah.
So that, in a nutshell, is sort of what happened to that last measure that made it very different from the others that came before it that were focused more solely on woman suffrage, whereas this was combined.
How in tune are people in South Dakota with that national conversation, whether it's the national hysteria about fear and anti-German sentiment, for example, or just the national push to get women to the ballot box? You know, do they have access to, you know, to the kind of news that's coming out of other places? Is it mostly brought through these, you know, these efforts of people coming to the state and walking, you know, around in communities? Is there a national press influence here? What do we know about how much of a vacuum were some of those decisions made, or was it really not at all?
Not at all. I mean, South Dakotans were in touch with the world at this point. There's lots of newspapers, and then there's lots of ethnic newspapers even, you know, covering European events. And then there's also, you know, think about how many newspapers we had at the time. I mean, every town had several little newspapers, unlike today. And, you know, they covered the world events because, of course, they're sending sons and husbands, you know, and even daughters as nurses to the war. So they're very in touch with sentiment growing and sentiment coming out of Europe against Germans. And so they're very in touch with that. And they're also suffragists, you know, come to the state. They, you know, national suffragists and plenty of young women that are hired by the National American Woman Suffrage Association come to the state and help lobby for the passage of the amendment. So they're in touch in many ways with world events, I would say. And some of those, I can tell you a little bit about some of those young women that are working in the state, if you want. They're a very interesting group.
Yes, please.
Okay. Well, one of them, a couple here, I think, that are really important for South Dakota, Liba Peshakova. She's a young woman from Wisconsin who... Mamie Pyle, the head of the South Dakota Universal Franchise League at the time, hired and paid her $25 a month plus expenses to go around to the various counties to try to help raise support for the ballot measure, to get petitions. Their plan was to send every voter on a local basis a petition that showed their local women wanted the vote. They would sign it. So she was supposed to help do that. She spoke Czech. She was of a Bohemian Catholic background, and she spoke Czech. And, of course, another immigrant group in the state were the Bohemians, the Czech Bohemians. Sure. And so she was able to reach them. And later I found an article about her reminiscing about this, and she said, you know, I was able to speak to them, and I won many of them over just by talking the Slav language to them. And she talks about how they showered her with these huge buns filled with fruit, which I'm sure were kolaches, right? And so that was very important, to have a suffragist who could speak foreign language. Now, another one of those was Ida Stady. She was a German immigrant to New York and grew up in Brooklyn, I think it was. And she was hired as a special worker, paid $75 a month plus expenses for Hutchinson County, which Hutchinson County was one of our most German-Russian counties at the time, 77%. And in 1916, Hutchinson voted 62nd out of 63 counties, ranked 62nd out of 63 against women's suffrage. So it was a tough county. And she went there and she wrote a letter, a newsletter in German, and she spoke to all these Germans. She was a German speaker herself. And Pyle said, oh, goodness, it's amazing we have a little, quote, ray of hope out there for Hutchinson County. And unfortunately, it did not pass women. He was one of the six counties that did not pass women's suffrage, but she may have made a difference. And she had a parade, which she had a woman farmer drive a tractor down Parkston with, you know, a series of women in their gold crowns, and then South Dakota, the woman of South Dakota without her gold crown tied by the cords of ignorance and vice, you know. So, those women, you know, made a lot of difference. I particularly like them because they're speaking in the languages that would have been spoken at the time. And this was something suffragists struggled with, to meet the needs and ideas of these voters.
Yeah. Ida Stady and Liuba Peshakova. Boy, what great people to get to know at this time. And you can see the SDPB documentary Simple Justice on demand now at watch.sdpb.org. It will be rebroadcast on SDPB TV August 19th and August 29th. Molly Rosem, thank you so much for today. This has been fascinating. And sure. We hope to have you back soon. Thanks.
Anytime. It's been a lot of fun. These women are a lot of fun to remember and talk about.